This is West Southwest on WMUK. I'm Earlene McMichael. On today's show, the theme is social justice activism, with MLK Day just around the corner on Monday. Coming up, Gordon Evans interviews Western Michigan University professor Alan Webb about the planned teach-in on issues of justice, civil rights, and climate. But first, I preview how Kalamazoo area organizations and the Kalamazoo Community Foundation are banding together to participate in the first ever National Day of Healing. They'll host a showing of the documentary America Divided on January 17th, followed by a discussion. Local representatives attended a summit that the Battle Creek-based W.K. Kellogg Foundation held in December to kick off the Kalamazoo Foundation's Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Long-Term Initiative. Attendees were charged with hosting events in their communities on a singular National Day of Healing. The Kalamazoo event is called Stories That Unite Us, and I talked to two of the organizers. Let's start off with you all introducing yourself.
Sure. My name is Lana Lewis, and I am a community investment manager at the Kalamazoo Community Foundation, and I have been involved with this initiative from my foundation's point of view as kind of the lead contact.
And my name is Jacob Johnson, a lifetime Kalamazoo resident. Here on behalf of SHARE, Society for History and Racial Equity, also representing ERACE, Eliminating Racism, Claiming and Celebrating Equity, I'm glad to be here.
And you serve as the coordinator of marketing and outreach for SHARE.
Correct.
Ms. Lewis, give us an overview of the initiative Stories That Unite Us.
Yeah, sure. So Stories Unite Us is really a one-day event that we're hosting here in Kalamazoo. The Community Foundation, SHARE, ERACE, along with the Fair Housing Center, the Black Arts and Cultural Center, the ARCA Center at Kalamazoo College. And we're really looking at collaboration for the initiative of Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation. So this day, this January 17th, is a National Day of Healing, and that was called for by the Kellogg Foundation as kind of a starting point for the Truth, Racial, Healing, Transformation Initiative. So this is really supposed to be a springboard to get the conversation started, to get us started on the work of healing and kind of dealing with some of the problems that have been really ingrained within our society since the inception.
The Kellogg Foundation. It's based here in Battle Creek, but it is actually one of the largest foundations around. I think it ranks number 6. The Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation Initiative launched last year, and in December, they held, meaning the Kellogg Foundation, held a summit in California, my understanding. Ms. Lewis, you attended, as well as Mr. Penny Johnson, you attended as well, and other of your partners with this local initiative, Stories That Unite Us. Tell us about that summit.
Yeah, so I was invited to the Truth and Racial Healing Transformation Summit by Ms. Lewis and the Kalamazoo Community Foundation. And it was really a call to action by the Kellogg Foundation, who had, like you said, started this initiative. And they pulled together over 130 organizations who are working on racial equity currently on a pretty big national scale, and around 500 individuals, including us from Kalamazoo, attended the summit.
And there was about four or five of you all?
Correct, from Kalamazoo, yes. And others from the state as well, so a few folks from Battle Creek, Detroit, and a few other places. And for me, it was a great experience. It had a real focus on racial healing, which is very much tied to the work of SHARE, Society for History and Racial Equity. We host racial healing retreats. But for me, it was great to see the approach that the Kellogg Foundation has put together to address this issue of race and racism in America is great. I feel like it was very thorough. So again, this big focus on racial healing and narrative change, but also looking at different sectors. So looking at the economy, looking at the criminal justice system, looking at education, and really looking thoroughly on how, on a national level, we can build a blueprint to address this, and then also charging folks to come back to local communities and really put together a plan collaboratively on how to really take this work to the next level.
Speaking of taking this work to the next level, Ms. Lewis, it was actually as a result of local officials, including yourself, attending that summit that inspired you to do the event here. Could you tell us a little bit specifically what's going to happen and what people will experience when they come out on January 17th?
Sure. Definitely one of the first calls to action, like Jacob mentioned, was to put on an event. So people were talking about, you know, we have this inauguration coming up, extremely divisive election with a lot of rhetoric around exactly the issues we're talking about. And so they really felt like it was necessary at this summit that we need to do something now. We need to start somewhere and start soon. The urgency was pressing. And so they called all of us that were there to go ahead and put on an event in coordination with this Day of Healing so that we can all kind of get started and get grounded before the inauguration and after King Day. They felt that that was a really important time for everyone. And so what to expect? We really, you know, the partners that we went with were really excited. And I don't think I mentioned Isaac before, but Isaac was also represented as a partner from Kalamazoo. They're really excited, and we were all really excited about the opportunity to do this. And we decided really quickly that this documentary series, America Divided, that was also funded by the Kellogg Foundation and we saw at the summit, which was a piece of it, was a really great way to start with truth, right? So it really is a series about narratives and about people's experience with discrimination. And the issues that are really pressing and central to the Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation initiative. So what we're going to do is kind of show some clips of it. It's a really long series, and it's actually accessible. The production company, Epix, is really making it accessible. So folks can go and watch the whole series if they want for free, I believe. But we're going to show some excerpts, and we're going to have it be more interactive than just a normal film viewing. So it's going to be a more of a film festival format where people can watch a little piece of this topic, then go to the next room and watch a little piece, another topic. And because our partners are engaged in that work locally, the work that is the topic of the film, they're going to be talking a little bit in the rooms, going deeper in the issues, doing some reflection, talk about how that folks can be involved here locally, and really have it be a place where people can start conversations. And then we're going to probably host some healing circles. The partners all are interested in hosting healing circles after this, but we really want to start with the narratives and the truth around some of these policies. So we're really excited about that. I mean, education, as Jacob mentioned, narrative change, healing, but also an important piece to this Truth, Racial Healing, Transformation (TRHT) initiative is segregation and legal aspects of that, and the economy. So really thinking in a really concrete way of how to, at those specific points, address systemic racism. So, you know, there's the narrative part, there's the culture shift, the interpersonal piece and personal piece about people's values around what they're calling a hierarchy of human value. But we really, not only that, it's not only just what you think, it's also about what the policies are, right? So it's not, it goes from this whole, well, it's not my fault, this guilt narrative, it tries to really move away from that in a transformative way that we can really transform our institutions and really come away from kind of that personal guilt that people feel around race and racism that kind of is sometimes a roadblock.
Can you educate us about what is a healing circle?
Sure, yeah. A healing circle really is grounded in kind of traditional non-Western cultures of how folks would come together as a community to either resolve a conflict or to build relationships. And so really what it is a way of facilitating a group process where we're in a circle and it's really non-hierarchical and really offers an opportunity for people to engage with each other, tell personal stories and connect and be vulnerable and open. And oftentimes it really reveals, and I'm actually been trained on this and on the circle process, it actually really reveals an opportunity to create a system where folks can be accountable to each other based on our own relationships and value as a community, rather than the way that the criminal justice system works now, or the retributive justice piece.
My understanding is there's a lot of well-known people who are actually interviewing different individuals as part of this film. For example, the comedian Amy Poehler and Common, the rapper Common, and any number of faces that I think people might recognize. Are they interviewing everyday people or individuals who are scholars or working in this, doing this work?
Yeah, a little bit of both, actually. So each of the celebrity correspondents were kind of assigned to a story that was close to their own personal experience. For example, Common's interviewing young people and police in Chicago. So they're kind of coming at it from both perspectives. And it's really interesting because really what they're asking is just critical questions and from both sides. So they really wanted to hone in, though, on one specific localized issue or one specific case. And really use that as a platform to really show the human side of what some of these issues look like.
And also hearing from folks from the opposing side, so to speak, so hearing from a conservative or Republican governors about their thoughts on immigration who might not agree with liberals or Democrats' thoughts, but hearing those, a lot of times we don't even invite or listen to those opposing stories or narratives. So the stories that unite us, I think, is also just hearing and listening to other viewpoints and opinions also.
You also, at this event, are going to be sharing the background of that Truth, Racial, Healing, and Transformation process initiative. You're going to be talking about it, but you're also going to be talking about some of the recommendations that came out of that summit. What are some of the major ones? Is there some that you can talk about?
Yeah, so, and that information is out to the public now, so definitely encourage folks to check out the Kellogg Foundation's website, and you could Google Truth and Racial Healing Transformation, and you should be able to get the layout, but we will, yeah, be given a brief background of the initiative, or actually enterprise, so they've named it an enterprise and not an initiative. With the thought of it being a long term, so an initiative is kind of a short term thing, but the enterprise is the thought of it being a long term.
Yeah, so, and actually, it's really, really a lot. Something that's really exciting to me is this narrative change, and you in the media, I'm sure that you can relate and might be interested in this area, but I think it's something that, especially with this past election, we really need to be conscious of, right? So narratives in the media, the especially news media, and even in the entertainment industry, how many people really develop their beliefs based on what they see in movies and on TV and from celebrities and also what they see on the news and how much that shapes what's happening and shapes people's opinions, and it may be accurate, it may not. And so really thinking about narrative change, how to lift up voices. So particularly one kind of recommendation is really lifting up voices of community members. Oftentimes in the news media, we go to the institutional representatives to get the story, and you never really hear the side of the story of the resident or, you know, and the community member that is being discussed, right? And so that's one of the most interesting things that I think that would really impact a lot of other things. It has a huge ripple effect. And when we're talking about narrative change and we're talking about healing and coming together, without having those stories be uplifted and having both sides or the multitude of sides, right, being told, the multitude of sides of the story being told, we really get these narrow, simplistic narratives, and it really shapes people's beliefs. So that is really exciting to me in what this initiative can do, and this, like you said, enterprise can do. And something that I don't think is, you know, we talk a lot about housing. I mean, it's something that feels fresh, right? It's something that feels like it's not paid enough attention to at this point. Whereas the other issues of, you know, housing, colonization, they focused a lot on colonization, especially around indigenous folks and around tribal reservations. And those dynamics were a big part of it, too, when we're talking about segregation and separation, not just what we think of as the inner city, right? Not, you know, that type of housing segregation. But those are issues that I feel, of course, need a lot of work. But, it, you know, the exciting and kind of new thing is how these things fit together and how narrative change can really impact the other sectors as well.
Oh, another one of your partners is the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center. just wanted to make sure to mention them as being among your partners. Can you speak a little bit more about, you talked about addressing segregation and addressing colonization. And when you're speaking of colonization, are you speaking mainly domestically and with just kind of indigenous people, or does that mean something else?
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up. Yes, I knew I was missing somebody, but yeah, I think that what they're talking about is broad, but I think that they had a huge focus on really starting like what Jacob is talking about, starting at the beginning. And I think for us here in the States, we really have to be more conscious of those issues and how much that is a part of, you know, the fabric of our society, the genocide and the stealing of land and the consistent, even we see to this day with Standing Rock, colonization happening where, you know, folks whose rights are supposed to be protected are being overstepped by companies along with the government. And so we really have to be aware and conscious of the land that we're standing on, you know. And so that was a big focus of it. But I think we can think about it broadly. We can think about Puerto Rico, too.
U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think they use the term separation to talk about colonization, segregation here locally, domestically in our cities, and kind of also economic kind of imperialism that happens with the U.S. government and institutions. So they use it really broadly. But I think but they also have called us. So when they call us to do work on the local level, we think about what's here. And so we know that, you know, with the Treaty of Chicago and the removal of indigenous peoples from this area in the early, let's say, 1830s, mm-hmm. I think 1830, between 1830 and 1840, and the forming of all of our institutions just right, like couple years after that. So I think they really are calling folks to ground themselves in whatever's happening local and I think that's powerful to really think about the local level. And so it's both institutional and personal, interpersonal, right? So the personal, interpersonal piece is, you know, we can have as many policies as we want today, we can write them, but if we don't address people's belief systems, we're just gonna keep fighting the same battles, right? So, but if we just only address people's belief system and don't address the systemic institutional issues, then everybody's gonna think they're all happy and good and we're gonna have the same result kind of structurally. So really addressing both ends of it, I think, but grounding ourselves in what's here locally. And I think particularly right now, they felt at the summit, it was really relevant to uplift that piece of indigenous folks, First Americans.
Who do you hope will come out to this particular event?
Yeah, I mean, any and everyone.
Even those who just may be curious and actually might not even perhaps even support the idea of racial healing. Do you think perhaps you invite those people to come and hope maybe that they'll be transformed in some way?
Yeah, I think definitely. And I think that's the most important thing that we can do right now also is try to really engage and be open and really have these conversations with folks. Right now, if we're only talking to people with the same values and belief systems that we have, you know, that's not what healing's about. This is about bringing everyone together and trying to wrestle with these varied beliefs.
We've been joined today by Lana Lewis, a community investment manager, which is the grant-making arm of the Kalamazoo Community Foundation, and Jacob Penny Johnson, who is with the Society for History and Racial Equity, as well as Erase. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks.
For a longer version of this interview, go online to WMUK.org. For West Southwest on WMUK, I'm Earlene McMichael.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Events to honor the life and work of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. have kicked off on the Western Michigan University campus. On Monday, the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, a day of learning and action, is scheduled at the Bernhard Center. Alan Webb is a professor of English at Western Michigan University, and he joins us to tell us more about what will be happening. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Gordon. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So give us the broad idea behind holding, I guess, what we could call a teach-in on Monday.
Some of our listeners may recognize the word teach-in from a different generation.
It goes back a ways, doesn't it?
But the idea is that there's some things are happening, important things are happening in the world, and there's a sense that students, faculty, and community members don't know a lot about what's happening. And the question is, how do we inform people and how do we get them involved in trying to exercise their rights as citizens and address important questions?
At the top of your flyer, it says addressing the threats to justice, the climate, and civil rights. Let's go through those one by one and tell me how you see the potential threats here. What are the threats to justice?
We've had this remarkable number of things happening in the world, and many of them coming together. I'm thinking about the Brexit vote in Europe. I'm thinking about the rise of far-right movements in Europe. But I'm also thinking, of course, about this country and the surprising election by the Electoral College of Donald Trump as president, and a lot of concern that many people have had about that election. Some people feeling their own rights are threatened. Some people concerned about inequality in our society and ways in which Bernie Sanders talked about the billionaires and how now we have a billionaire president and a cabinet with apparently many billionaires to join it. Do they represent a threat to justice? Do things like the policing of African-American communities represent a threat to justice? Does the consequence of climate change, which is created primarily by the richest countries in the world and by the richest people in those countries, impacting the poorest people in the world, does that a problem of justice? And yet, the issue of climate change, for instance, is something that the Trump administration appears to be taking a very strong stand on. So these are questions that are vital to everyone, and particularly to Americans. We've certainly heard a lot about the question of building a wall with Mexico during the campaign. Donald Trump talked about taking all of the undocumented people and sending them out of the country, including the Dreamers, which were a group of young people who were undocumented. And we have many of those students actually at Western. Will they be coming to Kalamazoo to round these people up? What is the response of us in our community? Is that raise a question of justice for all of us?
So you kind of tied justice and climate together there, but let me allow you to also address climate itself, the threat to climate as you see it.
I've been involved for 5 years in Western Michigan University's climate change working group, and I've learned a lot from the scientists that are part of that group, and I've started teaching and writing about it myself. But to be honest, the topic of climate change has really come to frighten me. As I read about it and teach about it, I've been learning about the impact of the overall rise in temperature on Earth from now it's about 1.3 degrees warmer than it was before the industrial era, and the Paris Agreement hopes to hold it to 2 degrees. Even 2 degrees can have many terrible effects, but as the overall global climate increases to 3, 4, 5, and even 6 degrees, the consequences are extremely dire. That would include, for instance, 3 and 4 degrees, the Sahara Desert moving as far north as the middle of France, drought in the United States, and other breadbaskets that would devastate food production. One climate scientist has described the difference between 2 degrees of global warming and 4 degrees of global warming as human civilization. So the thought that human civilization is in jeopardy should we get to 4 degrees, well, Scientific American 5 days ago published the research on what's happened to the climate even in 2016, the year we've just finished. 2014 was the warmest year ever recorded. 2015 was significantly warmer than 2014. And 2016 is far warmer than 2015. In fact, it's 0.2 degrees centigrade warmer. 0.2 degrees centigrade in 10 years at that rate, that's 2 full degrees centigrade. That's the difference between the existence of human civilization and not, according to scientists. So we are looking at, in the case of climate change, an extremely dangerous threat that is going to affect everyone.
And let me then have you address that third category, civil rights. What's the threat to civil rights?
Well, I've mentioned already the idea of the issue of immigration and the possible rounding up of undocumented members of our community. And we also have had a lot of talk about Islam and terrorism and linking those two words together. I think there's been a fear created of Muslims. It's sometimes called Islamophobia. We have many Muslims in our country. We have more Muslims than we do Jewish people in America. The idea of not allowing Muslims to travel to the United States or to blacklist certain countries that Muslims come from or to treat Muslims differently is a violation of, I think, our fundamental principles. I'd call it civil rights. We also talk about refugees, of which climate change is going to be one of the major sources, by the way. There have been about 20 million climate change refugees every year for the last 5 years. But Kalamazoo has been, in my mind, very honorably and civilly accepting a number of Syrian refugees. And we'll have a session at this event talking about how to support those people. Of course, we also talk about issues of gay, lesbian, transgender people. And we've made, I think, in my mind, some serious progress in our society, learning to accept people who are different and who are yet valuable contributors to our country. And yet many of the people involved in the current administration and much of the talk has been about rescinding rights, not only to bathrooms, but challenging the idea that marriage should be allowed between gay, lesbian people. And that, again, is an issue of civil rights.
Let me ask you, though, would this event be held, or might it be a very different event if someone else was going to be sworn in as president of the United States on January 20th?
I think this would be a different event had Clinton won the Electoral College. I think that the event is very keeping with Martin Luther King, very much in it. Almost all the issues that we're looking at are things that he focused on in his work. And he was very concerned with the idea of global justice, not only civil rights in this country. So I think many of the topics that we're talking about are a great fit with him. And Hillary Clinton and the Democratic Party, had they won the election, many of these issues would still be very important. I mean, I think that climate change is something that they recognized more so than the Trump administration, but to really understand its profound danger and its increasing impact is something that I know I would be continuing to work on. And I think that issues of policing and civil rights, the Black Lives Matter movement, those are things that, and college affordability, these are topics that we would want to focus on regardless of which party had won the election.
So if somebody comes to the Bernhard Center Monday and they spend all 5 hours there, or if they just drop in for 10 minutes, what are you hoping that they will take away from it? And what are you hoping then that they may do on Tuesday?
Let me say that we welcome people to come and go. And so come for the entire event from 10 till 3 or come and go as you wish. I want everyone to walk out of there with a sense that this is a crucial moment in American history, that now is a time to know about the dangers posed to justice, the climate, and civil rights. And now is the time to go beyond just learning about it online or reading the newspaper or hearing it on TV or just voting. Now is the time to stand up and be heard. Now is the time to take a step forward and start acting. In my belief, and I think some of the other organizers may share this point of view, we won't be able to continue our democracy, and we won't be able to have the just and right relations with each other and with other countries unless we speak out and get involved. And that's what we're hoping this teach-in will do for everyone.
Alan Webb, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. It's really a pleasure to be here. I admire WMUK and what you guys do here.
Thank you. Alan Webb is a professor of English at Western Michigan University. There are links with more details about Monday's Day of Learning in Action, as well as other events at Western to honor the life and work of civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr. Those can be found at WMUK.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.